You're listening to the Diplomats Asia Geopolitics Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Ankit Panda, recording in Washington, D.C.
And I'm your co-host, Katie Putz, also recording in Washington, D.C.
How's it going, Katie?
Going all right, all things considered.
All things considered, indeed. We have been talking a lot about what's happening in Washington the last few episodes, but today I thought we'd take a little bit of a, I guess, return to our origins in a way, and actually talk about Asia, because there is some really interesting news, both in the domestic and international sense, from the Philippines recently. So just a few days ago, former Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte, who was definitely a mainstay on this podcast a few years ago when he was the Philippines president, Duterte was arrested in the Philippine capital, Manila, and essentially sent to the International Criminal Court in The Hague, which has charged him with crimes against humanity. For listeners that used to listen to Asia Geopolitics when we used to talk about Duterte quite a bit as when he was the president of the Philippines, you might recall that he certainly had a loose tongue when it came to talking about the United States in particular. He had a strong anti-American streak. But most importantly, for our purposes today, Duterte oversaw an incredibly brutal drug war in the Philippines that resulted in a number of extrajudicial killings. And so that is essentially the charge under which he has been extradited to the International Criminal Court. This is a rare sort of gleam of light, I suppose, for international institutions and the broader what used to be the rules-based order, I suppose. But Katie, I'll stop there and I'll turn it over to you to maybe go a little bit deeper into the background here. Tell our listeners what exactly happened here with Duterte. How do we get here?
Yeah, so it certainly has been some drama in the Philippines this past week. So as you noted, on March 11th, Duterte was arrested in Manila. He had just arrived back from Hong Kong. He had gone to Hong Kong on March 6th. The Filipino police were enforcing an ICC warrant that had been granted on March 7th on charges. I think the direct quote is for charges of murder as a crime against humanity. And again, as you mentioned, this stems from his war on drugs, both as pursued when he was mayor of Davao and then also as the Philippine president.
Right. Yeah.
So some of the history of this, you know, back in 2019 is really where the sort of seed of this is. The ICC began a preliminary investigation of Duterte, who at the time was the Filipino president, for crimes committed in the context of that war on drugs between November 2011 and March 2019. Now, those dates are important because those are very specific, right? The Philippines joined the ICC in November 2011 and withdrew under Duterte's direction in March 2019. And so the ICC has argued that it retains jurisdiction over crimes allegedly committed by members when they're members of the ICC. So others have argued that since the Philippines isn't a member, the ICC has no jurisdiction. I'm not certain that's as compelling. But either way, in September of 2021, judges at the ICC authorized an investigation authorized a full investigation describing the war on drugs as widespread and systemic attack on the civilian population of the Philippines. Now, we'll get into sort of why now, and we can talk maybe a little bit more about what the ICC is and some of the other sort of geopolitical angles of this, but I'm curious where you'd like to take it next, Ankit.
Well, I was going to say, there's actually interesting domestic political context here too, right? Because you have Sara Duterte, who's the vice president currently of the Philippines, Duterte's daughter. You've had a falling out essentially between the Duterte clan and Marcos, the president, and sort of his supporters. And I think that's important context here because I think it actually allows for the domestic enforcement of this ICC warrant and Duterte being kind of put on a plane and being sent to The Hague to actually be something that comes together. So I'll be honest, I haven't been following that very closely, but that does strike me as really important political context, especially when I think we talk about, you know, the difficulties the ICC, for instance, ran into with its charges against, let's say, Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel very recently, where you didn't have that similar kind of domestic political arrangement for accountability in this in that particular case. So in the Philippines, that strikes me as relevant context that I think may have applicability to other contexts as well. I don't know if you wanted to add anything on the domestic side here, Katie.
Yeah, I mean, the domestic context is incredibly important. So, you know, in Sara Duterte, who's Rodrigo Duterte's daughter, is the vice president of the Philippines. The Philippines has a slightly different democratic election system in which the president and the vice president are not necessarily from the same party. They're elected separately. But so she's been vice president since Ferdinand Marcos became president in 2022. Now, that was sort of the product of essentially a political alliance between the Marcos camp and the Duterte camp. That started to fall apart really by mid-2024. Sara Duterte resigned from her post as education secretary in the summer of 2024, and then was subsequently investigated by the House of Representatives for the alleged misuse of millions of dollars in public funds. Another piece of sort of context here is that in February, she was impeached by the House of Representatives on the back of those allegations and of corruption, as well as a supposed threat to kill the president. So you can kind of start to see the tone of the political atmosphere. The Philippine Senate is supposed to convene a trial, but there's no date on whether she's on that quite yet. Another sort of important piece of this context is that when Ferdinand Marcos Jr. became president, he sort of came into office echoing the same sort of criticisms of the ICC that right. Duterte had sort of withdrawn the Philippines on. You know, he took office in June of 2022, said that he had no intention of rejoining the ICC, made it clear that the Philippine government wouldn't cooperate with the investigation of Duterte. And that, you know, he said this again in September of 2022. He officially requested that the ICC halt its investigation. And so an awful lot has happened between September of 2022 and then where we are now, where the Philippines, while not being an ICC member, has carried out an ICC warrant. And the other sort of piece of domestic context here is that the Philippines are headed towards an election in May. May 12th is midterm elections. So all 317 seats in the House of Representatives in the Philippines and half of the Senate seats are being contested. And so it's a pretty important political moment to see this kind of fracture. And it really does put a clear domestic motivation for why the Philippine government allowed this to happen now.
Yeah. And so, you know, there are obviously, I think, concerns there about potential for political violence, you know, leading up to this, just given the charges and the way in which kind of emotions are around Duterte's being sent to The Hague are going to be particularly high. I guess, you know, you said we should probably say a bit about what the ICC is. I think that's important, right? It's the only permanent tribunal in the world charged with investigating the crimes of genocide, crimes against humanity, the crime of aggression, and I also believe war crimes. And it was set up in 2002. It has I think a little more than half the world, I think, is prescribed in terms of the numbers of countries. But you obviously have a number of important countries that have refused to participate. So, you know, India, I guess in the Asian context, India, China, Indonesia, notably not members. The U.S. and Russia, signatories that have subsequently withdrawn. And the U.S. obviously has started to attack the ICC, particularly after the ICC charged Benjamin Netanyahu, the leader of Israel, an important American partner. And so I think in terms of the geopolitical ramifications, I think it's too early to really take stock of how the Duterte indictment is going to play out geopolitically. But I guess one of the big question marks, two of the big question marks are, you know, how will the United States sort of react? And then the other one is Southeast Asia, right? This is going to be, I think, something, you know, ASEAN has a rule of not really becoming involved in the internal affairs of its members, the post-coup environment in Myanmar being a notable exception in a way. But it'll be interesting to see if we do begin to see greater geopolitical reactions. Have you sort of picked up anything, Katie, in terms of the broader geopolitical significance so far?
You know, not quite. I haven't, for example, seen a reaction from the United States. It doesn't mean that there hasn't been one. I just haven't seen it. I do, in this sort of geopolitical space, since this is the Asia Geopolitics podcast, I think we also have to mention there's an ICC warrant for the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, which, yes. You know, stemming from the war in Ukraine in particular, effectively kidnapping of Ukrainian children and taking them to Russia is the charge in that case. And that warrant you know, has been interesting because in some ways it seems to have kept Putin from traveling to certain places. He was supposed to, for example, go to South Africa. I think it was for a BRICS summit. Ultimately ended up doing that virtually, even though South Africa said it probably wouldn't enforce the warrant. More recently, Putin did go to Mongolia, which is a member of the ICC, and the Mongolian government did not detain him because the one of the problems with the ICC and sort of international law in general is that, you know, it doesn't have an enforcement mechanism. It requires it necessitates its members to enforce these kinds of rulings. It's interesting in this case, in the Duterte case, that a non-member, the Philippines, is sort of following through. I think the mechanism or explanation that has been offered by the Filipino authorities is that, you know, the ICC asked Interpol to put out a red notice and they arrested Duterte on the back of the red notice. Whether that is functionally important or not, who knows? But in that sort of geopolitical context, you know, Putin has not been arrested, Netanyahu hasn't been arrested. And so I think sometimes there is this question of, you know, who is subject to these rules and at what point in time. And I think there's also another angle for us to explore here with the Philippines and international law more broadly, and maybe the argument that the Philippines should care about international law because it sort of relies on international law in the form of the UNCLOS, you know, the UN, was it? Law of the sea. You know, it wants the international community to support international law in that context. And so there's an argument to be made here that they should support international law in this other context. So I'm curious about your perspective on this wider international law question when it comes to the Philippines.
Well, that was actually about to be my closing thought, right? I mean, as somebody, you know, who covered the Philippines arbitration push against China in the 2016 a ruling of the Permanent Court of Arbitration, which is obviously distinct, on the case that the Philippines brought against China on excessive maritime entitlements in the South China Sea. That was obviously a huge win for the Philippines, and I think it showed the value of international law being something of an equalizer in international politics for states that have less in the realm of absolute sort of hard power, right? That is one of the major functions that international law is supposed to play. And so And, you know, and that obviously was a very different Philippine government. It was the Aquino government mm-hmm. before Duterte, and Duterte was actually inaugurated when that ruling came out, and he had a very different geopolitical disposition towards China. So even though the ruling came out and you had sort of the U.S., European states, Japan very strongly support the ruling, you had Duterte sort of embark on a broader geopolitical realignment effort with China that ultimately, you know, didn't really go anywhere because China made it actually very difficult for Duterte to make that saleable domestically in the Philippines, where, mm-hmm. you know, the Philippines remains overwhelmingly a very pro-American country, despite Duterte having been a fairly anti-American leader in many ways. And so, you know, that is, I think, really interesting context and background here. I guess the place to maybe leave the discussion today, Katie, is that, you know, we will be certainly tracking this. So just in the last day from The Hague, you know, Duterte basically claimed that he will take responsibility for the war on drugs and that he's essentially going to fight this legally. So I think we are going to end up with a very interesting sort of legal fight taking place in The Hague over who knows how long, but certainly I think this will be something we'll keep our eyes on.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the final thought that I would put out there is, you know, Marcos may have done a good thing for the wrong reasons, i.e. domestic political reasons. But, you know, his government does have a chance to sort of codify a positive change. There has been at least talk in the Philippines sort of civil society sphere about the Philippines rejoining the ICC. We'll see if the Philippine government picks that up and sort of doubles down on this as evidence of its adherence to international law, or it sort of stays in the political realm. And I think that could get very nasty if that switch isn't made, but we'll definitely keep an eye on it. I don't expect a trial with Duterte to be boring. So I think it will be interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah. He has a way with words, you might say. Anyways, for our listeners, thanks as always for tuning into the Asia Geopolitics podcast. If you have feedback for us, please do leave us a review. We really do appreciate that. And if you're not yet subscribed, make sure you do subscribe to keep up with future episodes as well. And as always, if you have suggestions for either of us, do just contact us via social media or email, and we're very happy to take your feedback and ideas into consideration for future episodes. So thanks a lot for listening, and we'll be back very soon with more.